Workforce Development. Welcome to another week in Salem. I'd like to acknowledge a few visiting pages we have for today. Ben Kilfoyle, Carly Olson, Molly Hingevark, Brandon Carlson, and Steve Ahrens. Thanks for coming and serving us today, and hope you enjoy your day at the Capitol. Go Whitford. Okay, I think let's open a work session for possible introduction of committee measures. You want to, Janet, please just give us a brief summary of the taglines here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's LC 1893 related to credit unions. At the Credit Union Association's request, Senate Bill 1888, the funeral directors, having to do with transport of human remains. LC 3104 from the Ambulance Association, and LC 3643, which is similar to a bill that was on set of tire permit fees, similar to a bill that was introduced in the 2003 session by the Road User Fee Task Force.
Okay. Thank you. You would ask. Senator
Mr.
Decker.
Chair.
Yes, Senator Decker.
We can do them all at one time, correct?
Yes.
I move that we introduce LC 3643, LC 3104, LC 1893, and LC 1888 as committee bills.
Thank you, Senator Deckard. Senator Deckard has moved LC 3643, 3104, 1893, and 1888 be introduced as committee bills. And again, this does not signal support or rejection, but rather just introduction to the process. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Okay. Today, we're going to hear Senate Bill 461, so I'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 461, and Janet, if you could tell us what we have before us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 461 is at Senator Deckert's request and would increase the amount that's collected from private electricity consumers for low-income electric bill payment assistance. It's a state program. There's also a federal program for a low-income energy assistance. The amount collected from all customers at this point is $10 million, and this bill would increase it to $15 million. And it's a program that's administered through the Housing and Community Development Department, but through local community agencies. Mr. Chair, this is separate from the public purpose charge on the electric bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Janet. Mr. Donovan, you want to come forward, and whoever else from your coalition you want to bring up with you?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ask Joan Cody to join me.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Phil Donovan. I serve as the Government Affairs Representative for the Community Action Directors of Oregon. I thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. A special thanks to Senator Deckert for working with us during the legislative interim to draft this legislation. Community action helps Oregonians move out of poverty. That's our mission. That's our goal. And we're here today in strong support of Senate Bill 461, which increases the Oregon Energy Assistance Program from $10 million to $15 million and allows the program to increase with inflation. Sometimes it's helpful to start out with what this is not, because while the Oregon Energy Assistance Program was created under Senate Bill 1149, it is not the public purpose charges, as Janet referenced. Public purpose charges represent 3% of the total revenues that are collected by private electric companies that was established in 1999. Those dollars are used to fund energy conservation, affordable housing, renewable energy efforts. And those charges, unless this legislature decides to do differently, will sunset in 2011. What the Oregon Energy Assistance Program does is it was created to help low-income Oregonians who are unable to pay their electricity bills, the vast majority of which who are facing a disconnection of service or have already been disconnected. It is one-time bill payment assistance, and unlike public purpose charges, it is not scheduled to sunset in 2011. This is an ongoing program. Nevertheless, the $10 million that you see in this program, that cap has been in place since 1999. Let me talk a little bit about the revenues that are gathered to create this program. Basically, there's a monthly meter charge, 33 cents for residential households, and just over 3 cents per kilowatt hour for business customers. Now, large electricity consumers are capped at a maximum of $500 per month, and I want to emphasize that under Senate Bill 461, that $500 cap remains in place. Now, as I mentioned earlier, the program has been at the 10 million mark since 1999, and as a result, the meter charges that I just referenced, both for business and residential customers, have been declining since that time. That's because we haven't captured population growth. And one other piece that I really want to pull out for you all, because this gets confusing for some folks, the scope of this legislation is limited to customers of Portland General Electric and PacifiCorp. And that's not a small number. That's about 70% of the state are impacted by this program. Now, the Oregon Energy Assistance Program serves people whose income is at 60% or less of Oregon's median income. Now, we estimate over 400,000 households are eligible, and you see that in the long lines that form around Community Action Agency when we accept new applications. Now, to be frank, you know, we're never going to reach the total number of households that are eligible, but what we can do is help those that are in most in need, because it's basically our belief that no children, no seniors, no disabled Oregonians should have to live without heat in the winter. Now, the increase that you see in Senate Bill 461 is born of recent experience. We didn't just pull $5 million out of thin air. Last year, Oregon received $5.5 million for energy bill payment assistance through what's called the Duke El Paso Settlement Agreement. Those were two companies that were kind of bad actors in the whole California energy scandal. And as a result, part of their settlement that they made with the state of Oregon directed $5.5 million. Now, what this did is it kept almost 17,000 households from having their electricity disconnected. Not only does this keep the heat on in households, it also saves the entire system money, because it is expensive to do the notifications, then to go out and disconnect, and then eventually to go back and reconnect. So I want to kind of get quickly to the folks that are here to testify today, because you get to see me all the time. But you are going to hear from Gerilyn Ness of Washington County Community Action, and she's going to talk about the fact that the Duke El Paso energy settlement made a positive impact, but these one-time funds are running out. You're going to hear from Steve Weiss, who will explain that our legislation does not catch us up with inflation since 1999. Nevertheless, we still see this as a very positive step forward. But perhaps most importantly, you're going to hear from some real people who have been helped by this program. Now, sitting with me today is Joan Cody. She's the legislative chair for the Oregon Energy Coordinators Association, which means she helps administer this program on the ground and has some very has the on-the-ground specifics and knows the administration of this program. So we really appreciate the opportunity to have a public hearing today and to bring these issues out and to talk about them. We're very anxious to move forward as well.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thanks, Phil, and thank you. My name is Joan Cody. I am, as well as the legislative chair of the Oregon Energy Coordinators, the energy services director for the Community Action Agency that serves Marion and Polk counties, located here in Salem. So what I wanted to tell you about was the people who we serve. Last year, with Oregon Energy Assistance Funds, we served about 2,700 households. 17% of those households already had their electricity turned off when they came to see us to get funds. 6% of those households were going to be shut off within 0 to 24 hours. Another 12% had shut-off notices ranging 1 to 5 days. 65% of those households had past due bills, which put them very definitely in danger for losing their electricity. 32% of these households had senior or disabled members, and 68% of those households had children under 6 years of age. The income for the majority of the households was less than 75% of the poverty level. That translates to about $1,250 per month for a family of four. Another grouping in the 75% to 100% poverty level range equates to about $1,667 per month for a family of four. An additional $5 million in the Oregon Energy Assistance Program would definitely help those in need. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you.
Thank you very much. Any questions of these first two panelists?
Okay.
Yes, Senator George.
Thank you, Chair Metzger.
Phil, if you could, and I'm sorry, I'm new to the committee, so can you explain to me exactly how this is put out to the rate payers? Can you explain, rather than the program side, the rate payer side, how is this $10 million currently divvied up, and what's the cost on the rate payers, and with this change, what would happen? What's the difference?
Well, let's see. First off, how it's rolled out, and just to, for Mr. Chair and Senator George, for practical purposes, if you were to pick up a Portland General Electric electricity bill, you would see on the bottom of your statement right currently a 33 cents that you're paying as a residential customer into this program. So all ratepayers of Portland General Electric and PacifiCorp residential households are paying that. For business customers of those same entities, they are paying based on their usage. And as I said, it's about 3 cents per kilowatt hour. I've been told that the average business, that equates to about $2.54 a month. And Steve Weiss, who's with the Fair and Clean Energy Coalition, can talk a little more specifics with regards to that breakout. This increase, and these are kind of back of the napkin numbers, if you will, but it's a 50% increase in the program. And so, you know, just extrapolating the basic math, you know, we'd probably see an increase of about 16 cents per household. So that's about $2 a year for a residential ratepayer. It's a little more difficult to get at that exact kind of precise number on the business side, but we think it would be about from 3 cents per kilowatt hour to about 5 cents per kilowatt hour. So again, it's $2.54 a month. Extrapolate that out, they'd be paying maybe 3.25 a year increase.
Are there other programs currently within our human resources department, within our counties, those things that also help with families that are struggling with the financial situation of paying power bills and basic necessities? What other programs overlap this?
Mr. Chair, Senator George, there's a number of programs, and there's a federal program called LIHEAP, which directs monies to the states. An interesting point to note here is that the federal government added $100 million into the LIHEAP program last year, of which Oregon and Washington, because of a relatively temperate climate and the way that they measure usage based on different fuel types, we got basically nothing. We got 1% of the increase. So the short answer is that there are other programs out there with the federal government, and then as well, and you should feel free to jump in on this, you know, there's voluntary programs that different utilities collaborate on, and in particular for customer-owned utilities, i.e. McMinnville Water and Electric, where they'll operate their own energy assistance programs. Sometimes community action agencies will administer that, sometimes not. Depends around the state.
Thank you.
Any questions, Mayor?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Morris Harris.
It's my understanding that community action groups, all of those funds go through the community action groups, or are the, and I think that was just a follow-up to Senator George's, that a person can't go one place and then go somewhere else to get assistance from another place. It's all coordinated. All that money comes into one place, community action groups.
Not exactly. The community action groups get the federal LIHEAP funds that Phil mentioned, and also the Oregon Energy Oregon Energy Assistance funds. There are smaller funds that aren't necessarily given out by the community action agencies. For example, the Duke El Paso money that you referenced earlier, Phil, part of that, there are many agencies that distributed that money. There were Salvation Armies.
Oregon Heat.
Oregon Heat, yeah, through Oregon Heat. And
okay, thank you.
Other questions? And we do have a couple of people representing community action agencies and signed up to testify, too. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask Brendan McCarthy to come up from PGE, because there were some just questions regarding, you know, the utilities and this. So I think I'll have him come up, provide his testimony, and then if you had any questions from the utility perspective, he's our guy. Welcome.
Good afternoon, members of the committee. My name is Brendan McCarthy. I'm here representing Portland General Electric today. And I do have with me our low-income expert, Margo Bryant, and if there's anything just that's particularly complicated about the program, I'll call her up for backup. But if I can just take a couple of minutes of your time and let you know that, generally speaking, we support the increase that's in this bill. We do not, however, support connecting it with the CPI index, mainly because of the conflict between a regular increase and the rate-setting process. We would be happy to come back in the future at some point in time and discuss another increase of the cap. We think it's a necessary and important component for our low-income customers that we have some bill payment assistance for them. We have a number of programs internally. One, we're starting a new sort of debt relief program called our New Start program. And we're very cognizant of the fact that as utility rates increase, there's a greater and greater percentage of the population that is having a difficult time paying their bills. We, outside of this bill, also just want to highlight, we see the need for some improvements in the program itself, the way the program is run. We're trying to set some meetings up with the department, with the Cato folks, with Fair and Clean, to discuss things that the department can do that might make this program run a little bit more efficiently. We think we might be able to leverage this $5 million into $7 or $8 million in real terms if there were some improvements. One easy one to explain is that currently the in danger of having the service disconnected is defined, or the agency is using a five-day rule. We think we just bumped that to 15. We cut off a lot fewer people, and one of the things that expends money out of this pot is reconnect fees and late, you know, other charges that are unrelated to actually paying the bill itself. So we can see a couple of those improvements and overall maybe a much better program.
Thank you. Ms. McCarthy.
Question.
Okay. Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm trying to understand again the scope of the different programs that are interlocking here. When Mr. Donovan was up, he was talking about some of the smaller public agencies have assistant programs. You're talking about having low-income assistant programs. I'm trying to understand how these interlock and how big they are. What is? Could you give a little more explanation of what's going on inside of PGE, and then why we couldn't have more of a voluntary type participation in this rather than just increase on the rate payers? Maybe you can explain to me where we're falling short right now outside of this, and if you already have your other program, where are we missing each other here? Where's the hole, I guess, we're trying to fill?
Senator Metzger, Senator George, I think that the problem is larger than the programs that we have. And that's about the best answer I can give you. We have many more customers who are in need of bill payment assistance than monies we have for them.
One follow-up? I guess what I'm looking for is a little advice on, I'm always nervous about sort of mandated programs where ratepayers are forced to participate in something like this. These are the kind of things to me that should come out of the general fund of the state if we're actually thinking we or raise some taxes and pay for these things rather than sort of what we're doing here on a fee. Is there what are the efforts on the voluntary side, maybe giving people an opportunity to put $5 on the bottom of their bill, participate like that? Is there any efforts, and can you guys do that through the regulatory process?
Senator Metzger, Senator George, we actually have in the past apparently looked into putting some sort of a box on the bill where people could, with one check, pay PGE and slide $5 over out of that bill into a fund, and apparently have had some difficulties in getting that done. And I don't know all of the details, but I have asked that question myself and have been told that that has been something that we've looked at and have not been able to get accomplished. And you'll have to forgive the lack of detail on that because I just don't know all the details. And perhaps Margo does. She's probably back there nodding her head.
Yes, she is.
Why don't you come forward then? We'll go from nods to verbalization here. Welcome. State your name.
I'm Margo Bryant with PGE.
And yes, I can elaborate a little bit further on what your issue is, Senator George. We do have another program called Oregon Heat. They alluded to earlier. It's a fuel fund network, and typically it has, on an average, for PGE alone, it distributes about $300,000 annually to people in need, and that excludes Pacific Corps customers, of course. I think Pacific Corps would be close to more like $200,000 or $300,000 also. And how we collect that money is through twice a year we solicit our customers to donate a certain portion, well, whatever amount that they can afford to Oregon Heat. And from there, Oregon Heat uses the services of some public social service agencies in addition to the CAPS. So basically the bucket consists of our state money through OEAP, our federal money through LIHEAP, and Oregon Heat. Oregon Heat was the administrator of approximately $4 million of the Duke settlement funds last year that was awarded through the Attorney General's office. So it's not an insignificant pot of money. It is a nice piece of change, but like Brendan alluded to, we still have so many more people that are of need. But to answer your question as far as how things are merging, yes, that would give you a better picture of the amount of money that is available to our low-income customers.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair. Yes, Mr. Decker. It's actually not a question, so I apologize that you're going to hear, but I probably should have set this bill up a little bit of kind of historically where the program came from. And I think it really comes from that incredible need that Brendan spoke to. The vast, and I remember Representative Witt when he was in the House, and myself, I think, saw at least the Washington County example of it, of lines and lines and lines in the cold winter days, and today's a little bit more moderate temperature than those days, and predominantly women with children, single mothers. I think we'll get the statistical analysis of how many of them are just single mothers that are working and trying to provide for their families. And I think that was the impetus. I think Representative Witt was kind of the driving force behind this when it started a few years back. But it really was that, where is the need and where are the programs that we have? And so in terms of streamlining the programs, that is absolutely essential. But in terms of even hoping with this modest program to touch that need out there, I think we'll still find ourselves where we're doing better, but with the cuts that LIHEAP federally are going to go through, we will still have the situation where we're just really getting at a small percentage of that overall population that is trying to get through their winter months with the unfathomable position that you just don't think of going back to a cold home at night, night after night with children, going back to a home that has no TV, no electricity, nothing. And so I think that really was what was the impetus behind, I don't want to speak for Representative Witt, getting this program starting and trying to at least ameliorate some of that need. And whether we're getting enough is a great question, though, because I think you could probably definitively say no, we're not.
Senator.
Thank you.
Let's.
Yes. I had a question for them. Yeah. Will you consider Oregon Heat your charity care, so to speak? Then does the corporation actually put money into the program themselves? And that $300,000 that you were saying, this is what PGE puts into their Oregon Heat program, but you don't give necessarily to the other. Like the community action.
You're correct, for the most part. Oregon Heat is our main organization that administers the money that we provide and what our customers provide. PGE provides a little over $100,000, both in kind and cash donation to Oregon Heat, that helps keep down the admin costs and things of that nature. And that's, we've had a relationship with them for over 15 years doing that, and every year it's the you know, the money kind of stays pretty stable, but obviously it doesn't meet the need that dramatically, except for last year when we had that wonderful one-time, non-recurring opportunity to get that $4 million out there.
If I could just tag on to that, Senator Metzger, Senator Monson. Again, I mentioned briefly that we have some programs at PGE, but one of the things we're starting is this New Start program where we're identifying customers who are having a difficult time paying their bills. And they may be behind or may have had some cutoffs in the past and that kind of thing. And we're going to try and work with them to sort of set them on a payment plan. And if they accomplish the payment plan, then we're going to give them some debt relief from the larger bills itself. So we are doing in addition to just contributing to Oregon Heat, we're looking at our customers and trying to come up with somewhat novel ways to hopefully get them have their power on a regular basis and still pay us something.
Thank you.
Let's ask Geraldine Ness and Yvonne Crum to come forward. And how about Stephen Weiss also? Let's do it that way. Maximize our...
Good afternoon. My name is Geraldine Ness, and I'm the Executive Director of the Community Action Agency that serves Washington County. And I have been working on issues of poverty for 34 years in a community that's considered the wealthiest in the state, the fastest growing in the state. And I can just confirm what Ryan is saying, that the need is absolutely unbelievable, even though we have this tremendous growth in terms of jobs. We are seeing more people than I ever imagined in my 34 years of being at Community Action. The programs that we operate are all focused on helping low-income families move out of poverty. So they're everything from the low-income energy assistance programs all the way over to Head Start. We have emergency shelter and child care for working parents and services for high-risk pregnant women. A range of services. But it is the energy assistance program that puts us in touch with the largest segment of our community. And prior to the Oregon Energy Assistance Program coming into effect, we were primarily relying on LAHEAP dollars, the federal dollars. And while those are two of the major sources, and we've been talking about them as programs, we think of them as funding sources for our energy assistance program, and that while Joan spoke about other organizations sometimes deliver some service, in Washington County, all of those funds that you have mentioned and others come together at our organization and are coordinated at our organization. And even the program PGE was talking about, New Start, we are administering that at our organization. So it's very well coordinated in our community. But prior to OEAP, the largest number of households we were able to serve that last year was 2,500 households in Washington County a year. The OEAP dollars for 33 cents a month on your bill allowed us to serve 8,000 families a year, and we are turning away probably 7 or 8 for every one that we're serving. So while we are just pleased that this program is in place because we've had a huge impact on the number of people who need our help, we're still not there. We can't answer our phones. We can't respond to everybody that comes to our door. So for us to have somebody like Senator Deckert come out firsthand and take a look, it's a life-changing experience. You just don't realize the struggle that families are having. And I guess before I go any farther, I really want to thank you, Senator Deckert, for all that you've done to bring this issue forward. Our program operates year-round, and as I mentioned, we have a variety of funding sources. And last year, the Duke El Paso settlement dollars that you heard mentioned came to us about $196,000 in Washington County. And it came at a time when all of our LAHEAP funds had run out. Now, these are the two major ones. So when one of those runs out, OEAP or LAHEAP, we're much, much smaller in what we can do. So it came during the spring, summer, and fall is when we spent most of it, and we were able to add an additional 700 households. in 06, and it was extremely valuable because of that, because that's almost 10% of the total households we served were because of this one-time money. So of course we know that because it's one-time money, this year 700 households will not get served with Duke El Paso or any other dollars. We operate with two offices in Washington County doing the intake. One is in King City, one is in Hillsborough. We also have a very large mail-out that we do to elderly and homebound elderly and people with disabilities. But we also have a unique approach where we are partnering with many different social service organizations, including senior centers in Washington County, who voluntarily do intake and do outreach to people who are eligible but have barriers for coming in and doing applications. And those might be language barriers, it might be illness, it might be mental health. It might simply be families with small children that it's hard to get to an office. And when our funds get low, we prioritize them to make sure we're serving the most vulnerable. So in any given week, our appointments are filled, just absolutely filled. And yet every single day we have people walking in who have been shut off or have a 5-day disconnect notice. And we have many, many more people with 5-day disconnect notices than we've ever had in previous years. And so we will fit them in and make sure that they get their service turned back on, because we know what it means to the family. We've seen it. We've been in these homes. Also, each person who calls us seeking help, we do a screening to take a look at what kind of payment options are possible for them to get through this, as well as what other resources might exist for them. And, of course, we refer them to our low-income weatherization program and to energy conservation workshops, to self-help weatherization. So just to close with sort of a description of need, the week of January 8th through the 12th, we were asked to try to keep track of all the contacts that were made from people seeking help. And I say try to, and the reason I say that is we don't even have the capacity to answer the phone. We don't have the phone line capacity and the people capacity to really capture all of that. But we made a huge effort that week to do everything we could so that we had a good sense. And so that week, we heard from 1,800 households seeking help, trying to get assistance, and we were able to help 280 of them. That's about 15% of the eligible group. And over half of them had no gas or electricity on, or a 5-day, within 5 days they were going to lose it. So very serious situations that they were all in. And our desire is to make sure that every single household in Washington County that is struggling economically has a place to go where they can get a response and assistance to help them build back up to some point of self-sufficiency and economic security. And so when we work with families, we're looking at all the ways that we can serve them, and energy assistance is just a keystone. It's just critical. So can I answer any questions?
Well, I think what I'd like to do is go to our next guest, Ms. Crum.
Hi, my name is Yvonne. Thank you for taking the time to see me today. I actually count this a privilege. I've had to use Community Action a few times, and she's right about the phone lines. To make an appointment over there, it's really hard. Sometimes you have to walk in because you can't leave messages on the way that you call, so it's very complicated. Unless you have more money and then you have a computer, then you could email them probably. But anyway, it's very difficult. You have to get there in person sometimes. In order to talk to a live person. My name's Yvonne. I'm actually from Beaverton, Oregon, and I am a single parent of two girls. One is disabled. We have been through a lot these last few years, and Community Action has been much more of a resource than just helping me with energy bills. And they've actually really been there in terms of things that I've went through emotionally, and my daughter getting disabled. They would fill in gaps that I couldn't have done without them being there. They Oh, maybe I should stick to reading that, huh? My children's educational expenses and medical have been really hard parts of my budget. With a great deal of personal loss over the last 5 years, I've only been able to have a part-time job. It is only a single household income, so it's just my money that's coming in. I couldn't work full-time because of the emotional strain that was on my house because of my disabled daughter and getting her needs met, if that makes any sense. Part of my income is commission-based, and so I would vary from income from $900 to around $2,000 a month, depending on what my commission's paid. And that would kick me off of food stamps, so that was very complicated. Then I'd have to reach in, you know, to get the food from, of course, the regular budget. While running behind on bills during low-income months, especially after losing food stamps, I would have to set up a payment arrangement with PG&E, which they taught me how to do. So I'm very, very glad for that, in order to buy groceries. Reapplying for food stamps only occurs during working hours, so it's like from 8 to 10 or 8 to 11 in the morning, and I would be losing time at work, and I'd probably lose my job if I tried to play around with the way they do things. They want you to be there. You have to be like the first 7 people at the door from 8 to 10 or whatever the hours were, and I would have to take off 2, 3, 4, 5 days in a row, hoping I was going to be one of the first however many people there in order to get it. I would end up losing my job, and that's not a smart thing to do, trying to get food stamps, so that's not what I've chosen to do. I just really crumped down on my budget. I'm very good with my money, actually. So, in order not to lose my job, I've decided not to do that, and I've had to learn how to ask for help. It's been really hard on me for the last 4 years to ask for help. I'm not an asker. I like to give. I don't like to receive so much. That's why they've been so important to me. When educational expenses came in and medical expenses came in that were just totally unforeseen, I've had them be there to help me along the way. So I pray for... Here we are. Here I was speaking from the heart. I have a girlfriend who is like me in terms of she likes to give and not ask for help so much, but she's had to turn to them. I told her to ask for help, and she's had to turn to them because she has a baby, and she had her lights off, actually, and her daughter is in diapers still, and so she had diapers to add to her budget issue, which is another stretch, and she works with me, and she was only working part-time, and because they were able to turn back on her lights and get her to where she could go to work and take showers and things like that, she was able to go ahead and go from part-time to full-time here recently, so she's totally self-sufficient now, and that's much to credit for this program. I have another friend who has late-stage diabetes, and she could have froze to death this year if it hadn't been for community action. She had no electricity in her house at all, and she had gas, heat. Community action actually paid for her to get electricity and then helped her budget to where she knew how to pay her gas bills. They were old, like 3 years old, so she had to pay them because they don't pay past bills. They're not trying to repair your credit that you destroyed. They're not trying to do any of that. They're trying to help you become self-sufficient, and they really are trying to do that. They actually was able to talk her into budgeting in a way that she would be able to pay that herself, and they did pay the deposit for her to get the gas on. She had electricity, but she didn't have any hot water, and she didn't have until she was able to pay her old bills. But that's a consequence. It's a natural consequence. If you don't pay your bills, you have, you know, other things that happen. They don't try to dig you out of an old grave that you made for yourself. They really don't. They make you responsible, and they encourage you to learn how to take care of your money better. So anyway, she has hot water now, and she's learned how to pay an old bill that she didn't want to pay, but that's too bad. Community Action has really been a friend to me, a friend to a lot of my to my coworker and my other girlfriend as well. And it's a resource provider. They have employees there who listen and they care without judgment. They don't judge you thinking that you're some poor pathetic little thing that needs help, and they actually listen to your needs and your wants one on one versus they don't just look at your income and say, you know, you're over. They hear, like, why can't you make this work for you? And it's if you have other issues, they will take those into consideration. We have a major insurance problem, which is really draining a lot of low-income people's budgets. And that's what I was referring to in terms of the medical. Mm-hmm. When we don't get insurance for part-time employment, we don't have medical to turn to, so we get unexpected medical expenses if you're going to take care of your kids correctly. So it's just natural. They do give assistance. They are safe people to turn to in a society that you could ask a lot of people for help. I mean, once you learn how, like I had to, you can turn there and you know that they're safe. You can ask them for help and they're going to be there for you. They can't help everybody. And that's really sad, the number of people that you have to turn away. It's really sad. To help, they help me meet living expenses. I'm grateful for Community Action for the help that they've given to me to help me meet my needs and the needs of other people with low incomes and with families. They've improved the quality of life. They've saved lives because of their assistance. They've helped poor people provide basic necessities for their children, given self-esteem, and offered a hand up to people temporarily down on their luck. This program helps people like me and my coworker climb out and eventually be able to so we can turn around one day and we can give like we want to in the first place. If they can help us through the rough spots, we can get on our feet and be able to. My daughter's almost an adult now, so and my future is projected to be giving back, and I think that's definitely where my heart is. So that's why I'm here, and I took the day off, and I could have been getting paid somewhere else.
Ms. Crum, we appreciate that very much. Thank you.
You're
welcome. I very much appreciate your testimony. I think before we ask any questions, I'm going to get to our next guest up here, Mr. Weiss.
Well, thank you. My name is Steve Weiss. I'm Senior Policy Analyst for the Northwest Energy Coalition. This little handout shows along the left my our members of our organization. We're one of the largest organizations in the Northwest with environmental groups, low-income groups, consumer groups, some good utilities, including Portland General Electric, EWEB, and so we represent a huge portion of the region. The need for this program, obviously, is you're hearing from the people who have to deal with it. I'd like to deal more with the numbers in the program. The inflation has eroded this program. It started at $10 million in 1999. The CPI has risen 17% since then, as of the end of 2006. The number of residential customers has increased, and these two utilities grew by 10%, and average residential rates increased 24.9%. So, and of course, these things all work together. The program, therefore, has been eroded, is thinned out, it has more need, cover with the constant dollars in an inflated world. The original need is therefore, if you were just try to meet it at the same level as we met it in 1999, would have to go up by about 60%, and this is a 50% program that's in the bill. So it's about keeping even, slightly less than keeping even when the program started. Secondly, and I think this is the biggest issue for people, is will this raise rates? And that's a good question. That is always a good question. Phil gave you a wrong number for the commercial customers. The residential customers right now are paying about 33 cents a month. This would raise them about roughly 50% to 45, 40, $0.50 a month. The number for commercial customers, he said 3 cents a kilowatt hour. It's 0.03 cents a kilowatt hour. 3 cents a kilowatt hour would be close to half your bill. But this is a very small amount per kilowatt hour that the commercial customers pay, and then it's capped for the large industrial customers or Fred Meyer and those the largest customers is capped at $500. What's important to note about this program is that it pays for itself. It does not cause a rate increase. And behind my testimony are two analyses of the program. The first was analysis of this program, of a program done for Eugene Water, of a program just like this. And on the inside, you can see there's a little table, ES1 it's called, and you can see that the money spent on this program, for each dollar of money spent on this program, the utility saved $1.48. Well, how did that happen? The way it happens is when you help people pay their bills, if they can't pay their bills, they skip out. They skip out on a $300, $400, $500 bill, and you can't collect it. It costs a lot of money. The utilities will tell you anywhere from $50 to $75 to send somebody out to disconnect, to send somebody back out to reconnect. You can't do it electronically because you have to actually be there in person to turn on somebody's power in case there's any safety problems. You have to send out notices. You have to, the front line has to negotiate payment issues. You have, when payments are way behind, you send them out for collection. The utility only gets a portion of the collection money. So the utility loses more money by not having this program than they do if they have this program. Thus, adding a dollar to this program does not, overall, will allow the utility to have savings that more than make up for the dollar. The second analysis was of this program in November 2002, and it came out with similar results showing that for the utility for the first year, for every dollar spent on this program, the benefit cost ratio was $1.07. That is, for each dollar they put out, the utility saved $1.07, and over 1, 2, 3 years, at the bottom there, it shows it went up to $1.77 for each dollar spent on this program. So some people think, well, this is a welfare program, and maybe it should be done out of general funds. And that's a good question. Maybe it should be done out of general funds. On the other hand, this is dealing with a utility issue that is costing the utility money. Having shutoffs of hundreds and thousands of people each winter costs the utility a fortune. A program like this saves the utility money, and so it's natural that the utility should be spending this money to save money. It's like any other investment. We sometimes sort of laughingly call this a profit center. That is, for each dollar spent on the program, they're making more than a dollar back. That goes back into ratepayers' pockets. So because this program, rates have not had to rise as far as they would if this program did not exist. Finally, just this one little thing. It's been talked about, there's a lot of people have gas, and this is only for the electric companies. There are similar programs that are like this that Northwest Natural and Cascade have right now too. So and the same agencies administer them in many cases. So but this program just covers the electric side.
Thank you, Mr. Weiss. Questions for any of our panelists?
I will ask, Mr. Weiss, I have a question for you from the coalition. Two things. Number one is Mr. McCarthy from PGE was questioning the CPI bump as a statutory requirement as opposed to coming back asking for increases when appropriate. I'd be curious, first of all, to your response to that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, of course, we can come back each legislative session and ask for this. I think it's really a better program to say that the need increases with inflation, the costs of energy go up, that having this link to the CPI keeps it from eroding, actually, behind. So, yes, it would force us to every 2 years to come in to catch up, play catch up, I guess. I don't think that's a very efficient way to do things. So we're recommending that that we don't have to go through that process, that it's automatically done by the commission each year.
Okay. Any questions?
Senator Deckard.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. So I've always bought in the idea that this is a relatively efficient program, low overhead, money gets into people's basically bills pretty quickly, but there was testimony that we have somewhat of a disorganized system of delivery in terms of low-income heating assistance. Is that correct? And if there are, we ought to be all about perfecting the system so that any resources we generate go right into bills.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Deckard, yes. I'm not really the one to ask about the delivery of the program. It's difficult, though, to deliver programs to low-income folks without going through a lot of hoops. You have to verify income levels, mm-hmm. verify that the poverty is really there, there's a lot of confidentiality issues. The reason that the program, and I was involved in passing the original legislation, I wrote a lot of it, was that there are other funds that these agencies already administer. They already administer the federal programs. And so that way, if we had some other group do it, we would have had to duplicate a bureaucracy. So this way, it simply augments the funds that they're getting for the federal programs. The federal program has a lot of oversight and standards that they have to meet for how they deliver it, and caps on the admin costs that they cannot go over. And so this program meets those same standards. And we thought that was the most efficient way to deliver the program. There was an issue that a gentleman from PGE raised, and it's a good one. Should you wait until the very last day and save somebody when they're already deep in trouble and they're just about going to have their power shut off? Or could you get to those people earlier, come up with some education and some payment plans? Clark County up in just across the line, Vancouver, has a program where they require people to pay a certain steady portion of their income, and they find that actually saves quite a bit of money and avoids cutoffs. But the original legislation was focused on crisis assistance. It's very difficult to say we're going to let all the current people in the pipeline get shut off while we deal with these people who aren't quite as bad off. But we are, and I think all the agencies are quite willing to talk to PGE and try to streamline the program. Nobody's against that. We don't think it should be done in legislation, but yes, we're always looking to make it work better. But you'd probably ask that question of some of the agency people, too.
Great. Thank you. All right. Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you. Next up, I'm going to call Doug Bartlett and Richard Matthews. And I will say everybody's signed up in support, so I just kind of remind people that more is not necessarily better. So I'd like to have, I'd love to have any new arguments and things, but in terms of how important the need is, I think we have a grasp of that. Welcome, Jim. Welcome back, coming from the Gorge again.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, my name is Jim Slusher. I'm the Community Action Executive Director for Mid-Columbia Community Action Council in Hood River, Wasco, and Sherman Counties. I've held that position for 27 years, and I've also worked in the low-income energy assistance programs for the past 30 years. So I think I have a little bit of grasp of how the programs work. I can give you some testimony that would tell you that there's about 20,000 households that receive assistance through the Oregon Energy Assistance Program. A lot of those are in crisis situations. Some of the answers, I guess, to maybe some of the questions that you've had is, in my area, one of the things that we have is I deal with every kind of utility that there is, because we deal with municipal, I deal with co-ops, I deal with PUDs, and I deal with Pacific Power, and distribute all the different kinds of funds that there are for all those agencies. It's a very well-coordinated system. We also have programs with all the different utilities. For Wasco Electric, I have a We Care program. For Northern Wasco PUD, I have a neighbor-to-neighbor program. Even with all of those funding sources that we have, I also receive Duke El Paso money, every kind that there is. And my agency still has 550 households that are on a waiting list that I have no funds for. I can use every kind of funding piece that I have, but I still have 550 households, and every day more calls come in. And I'm one of the smaller agencies in the state of Oregon. I've also given you a copy of the latest Oregon Energy Assistance Snapshot that the agencies provide each year to our legislative people, both state and nationally. And it kind of, when you go through it, it kind of, the picture on the front will show you the Joan Cody's agency from Mid-Willamette that has the people lined around the building. I have people that line up at 9 o'clock at night. I don't open until 8 o'clock the next morning. We have around 250 to 300 households that wait in front of our building. Normally, because if I have about 1,700 households that I can serve, and I send out, we send out letters to seniors and disabled people during the month of November. So when I open my doors officially on December 1st, if I have 700 applications to split between my counties, that's why people line up at 9 o'clock the night before. They know if they're not there the first day. So they stand in line for anywhere from 10 to 11 hours to try to get an appointment for energy assistance. When you look at the snapshot in certain areas of it, you look at the community action team up on the Oregon coast. On the northern Oregon coast, they have 1,450 households on their waiting list. Southern Oregon coast, when you look at the Oregon Community Action Agency there, there's around 900 households. The Bend Redmond area, they have about 1,500 households that are on the waiting list that we have no funds for. Even with all of our coordinated funds, all of the sources, all of the utility programs have some sort of program for agencies, for clients that the utilities have. Those funds are all used up as well when we get into the program. So normally there's some areas that may have some funding left. Generally, most of the areas, I think Lane County, you're looking at almost probably 3,000 households that they have on a waiting list that they have no funds for. So the need is definitely there. That's why we ask for your support of Senate Bill 461. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have regarding the programs.
Jim, I had one. With our cooperatives, like in our area, like with the Hood River Electric Cooperative, do they have a program also?
Yes, they do. And they've up until this year, they've handled their own program, and we convinced them this year, Senator, to funnel the money through us. Not only does it help with coordinated services, I asked the utility, do you like to be a social service agency? And they go, well, not really. But when that money's funneled through us, we're also able to look at additional barriers or problems that the household may be having. They may come in with a disconnect notice in one hand and an eviction notice in the other, and can you help me? My husband's left. I have two children. He hasn't paid the bills. What can you do for me? So at that point, we really try to work with the household. But every utility I have has some sort of fund. Is it enough? No. Would I like to see more from them so that we could serve everybody? Certainly.
Mr. Chair, yes. Along those lines, that's what I was trying to get with PGE. You know, what percentage, I mean, when you look at charity care amongst the hospitals, it's huge. And I was just wondering, of these co-ops and of PG, you know, what percentage of their, I'll hate to say profits, but maybe that'd be the cleanest way, how much do they really give to helping those in need?
I think they try to do the best they can, Senator. Is Senate Bill 461, which for the investor-owned utilities, do any of them reach that level? No. Some of the smaller utilities that we have put in maybe $3,000 a year, $4,000 a year to help with energy assistance. So that $3,000 or $4,000 doesn't go very far when you have 500 or 600 people waiting to get that assistance. We've seen more disconnect notices come out this year. People that are at risk of being disconnected or have been disconnected, and the sad part is they sort of get to go to the front of the line, so we're sort of teaching a bad habit that if you let your power bill lapse a little bit, you'll get to go to the front of the line in front of people who've been standing there waiting. So the utilities are starting to pick up on that a little bit, and that's an issue that we need to deal with. But overall, the program works very well and serves the people that it's intended to at a very good price. So.
Yes, sir.
My name is Doug Bartlett, and I'm the director of Yamhill Community Action Partnership, a private nonprofit agency that serves the most vulnerable citizens of Yamhill County. We operate three homeless shelters, We operate a large food bank that supplies 11 food pantries scattered around the county. We operate local public transit services for the central and western part of the county. And we operate a youth drop-in center in Newburgh. And we administer all of the energy assistance and low-income weatherization for the county. Our targets are the vulnerable seniors, disabled, and youth. And I come to speak in support of Senate Bill 461. As you know, energy costs have really increased. I was amazed to learn that the average middle-class home spends approximately 5% on utilities. A low-income home can spend more than 20% because they have less money and because they live in homes of an older stock that have less insulation and they have higher heat bills. It's backwards. Through Senate Bill 461 and the minor restructuring of this bill, this will go a long way to alleviating some of that disparity and helping us and equipping us to serve the most vulnerable of our state. The way we do it is each quarter we receive an allocation from the Department of Housing and Community Services, and it is for that quarter. It's a very ugly situation. Do we use it all and then run out in a month and then go for 2 months and not have any funds? What we've done is we divide that into three equal parts and we use one third for the first month. And when we run out, we close the program down. We start it up again at the first of the second month and we run it for as long as there's money, and then the OEAP program is shut down. We do that throughout the year. It's a very difficult one because either way there's going to be lines of people that are not served. Just recently, a single mother and two children applied for assistance. She hails from rural Yamhill County and occupies an older home with minimal to no insulation. Her heat bill for 1 month was $390. Now, the tyranny is if she comes to us in the first of the month, she might be able to get some help. But if she comes to us in the end of the month for this OEAP assistance, we're out of money. And so then she'll have to come back again the next month or whatever. It's a tyranny that will be helped by Senate Bill 461, and we simply ask for your serious consideration of that.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Chair Metzger, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Richard Matthews, and I'm a manager within the Community Resources Division of the Oregon Housing and Community Services. My division is responsible for delivering the energy assistance programs as well as the weatherization programs for low-income Oregonians. I appreciate the opportunity to come before you today to speak on the role of OECS in delivering energy assistance, the Oregon Energy Assistance Program, or what we call OEAP. SB 461 requires PGE, Portland General Electric, and PacifiCorp to collect $15 million annually beginning in 2008, instead of the $10 million collected currently. The new language also requires the Public Utility Commission to adjust the amount collected from consumers proportionate to rises in the Consumer Price Index. That takes effect in 2009. Oregon Housing and Community Services energy assistance programs are committed to addressing the disproportionate energy burden facing many low-income Oregonians. Through the Oregon Energy Assistance Program, OEAP program, plus the federally funded LEAP program, or Low Income Energy Assistance Program, OHCS provides bill payment assistance to over 80,388 households. Of those households, 22,000 plus were funded with the Oregon Energy Assistance Program. However, according to the census, there are 419,000 eligible households in Oregon. Together, just the OEAP and the LEAP program serve 19% of that 419,000 eligible households. In the past, we have received $5.5 million in one-time settlement funds. These are the Duke El Paso funds that we've recently received that we referred to earlier. These have allowed the state as a whole to reach a 23% participation rate, 23% of that 419,000 that are eligible. However, this is no assurance that there is no assurance that this one-time funding will be available in the future. The additional $5 million provided by SB 461 will allow community action agencies to serve approximately 13,000 plus more low-income Oregonians annually. Even with this increase, there will still be over 300,000 eligible households. Let me just briefly review what the OHCS role is in terms of delivering low-income energy assistance. OEAP program and the Oregon Energy Assistance Program is community-based. OHCS delivers the Oregon Energy Assistance Program through 17 community action agencies. OHCS is dedicated to community partnerships that empower clients and the local agencies that serve them. Through coordination with community action agencies across Oregon, the OEAP can effectively address client needs through providers who live and work in communities. The Oregon Energy Assistance Program provides effective client services. Trained and experienced local intake workers, energy educators, case managers, coordinators are well qualified to provide high-quality services for OEAP clients. OHC staff is committed to providing training and development opportunities necessary to build the local capacity to deliver the energy assistance programs. Oregon Energy Assistance Program provides accountability. Utilizing a common data entry tool, what we call OPIS, OHCS can not only effectively monitor but can also evaluate program delivery at both the local and state levels. Additionally, local partners regularly utilize the system to track client progress and avoid duplicate payments. Statewide use of this central database increases public accountability for OEAP monies. Oregon Energy Assistance Program is cost-effective. By facilitating delivery of energy assistance through the 17 community action agencies, clients in every corner of the state are served at the local level. Active collaborative partnerships allow OEAP to be effectively delivered to the greatest number of participants at the lowest cost. There is no additional administrative expenses needed to implement the additional revenue from this bill. OHCS has a program in place, and we will be able to allocate these funds along with other program funds. In summary, low-income Oregonians should not be forced to make decisions between energy bills, food, housing, or health care. SB 461 will provide energy assistance to many needy households. Still, even with the additional revenue provided by this bill, many will not receive assistance. We appreciate the support the legislature has given this program in the past and ask for your continued support. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. That concludes my testimony. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. More questions from the committee for these three. Just an observation with some of the material you have and, you know, the lines. I mean, we talk about trying to be more efficient. I think that's a real key part. I would imagine, for example, that like in the picture here with the one that was here in Polk and Marion counties, all the people, I would imagine some of those people probably have jobs. We hope they do to help pay for that. But obviously they're not working because they're standing in line, which kind of works against what we're trying to do. And, you know, the comment, I think, as Krim pointed out, that there's no answering machine, so people have to come and take time to call and call again. I mean, one of the things is I think it would be really, really incumbent on all of us is to figure out a way. Yes, we want to help the people who are taking the initiative to do this. We don't want people to jump in line, so to speak, but we don't need to, you know, this isn't the Dixie Chicks, you know, where they have to line up to get the ticket. I mean, we should find a way to do that so that their time could be used efficiently and, you know, hopefully working and trying to do their own finances, as well as, you know, worrying about having to stand in line or call back. And I don't know what the answer is, but, you know, this seems very archaic of approach of helping folks who are probably losing the opportunity to earn dollars, kind of help themselves while they, you know, continue to redial. Yes, you had a comment.
That's a very good point, and it's a difficulty, like, statewide. We're also looking, and it's been tested in Portland at a local subrecipient, the voice-activated system, where a caller can call in, go immediately, and within maybe two or three buttons to push on the phone can actually get an appointment scheduled. So we are turning the system upside down, looking at any way we can to make it more efficient and cost-effective.
term.
I think that would be an important part. Any other questions for this group? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, the last people we have set to testify, John Ledger, but I don't see him here. So Kevin Feeney and Jeff Bissonnette. If you'd please come forward.
John's taking a different form.
Oh, okay.
Smaller.
The John Ledger look-alike.
That hurt.
Only kidding. By contrast. But since we'll defer to the ladies, so please, let's ask her to go first.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Julie Brandis with Associated Oregon Industries. I wanted to point out some things about this legislation that are of concern. Certainly, I think you have a task to look at, and people certainly deserve to come home and be able to turn on their lights and keep their kids warm, and we understand that. I just wanted to point out a couple things. First, I don't know of any other place in regulated energy rates where we tie something to the CPI. And I truly believe that AOI and the work that we've done in conjunction with energy users over the years, I don't think that's a place that we think is a good place to go. And maybe a better place to go would be to have the commission continue to look at this issue and present information either to the legislature or to find some way to tie whatever the to find something to tie that to an increase, but I would really hate to see CPI in energy rates anywhere, just because energy rates are impacted by so many things. I think the second thing I wanted to point out to the committee is, and this is just based on information, and I'll hand this out. I forgot to do that. I'll do that in a moment, though. It's based on information from a similar bill last session when a similar proposal would have bumped up from $10 million to $15 million as well. And because there is a cap at $500 for large customers, that does cause a compression. So commercial customers would actually start be paying, based on last session's numbers, 50% more on the low income assistance rate, just that portion, because there is that compression. And I assume it's similar for residential rates as well. Also keep in mind, there is a difference between industrial and commercial customers. Industrials tend to have, you know, one or two or three big plants. Commercial customers, take a Home Depot, for example, have multiple stores that are not at the industrial level. So you might see a company like a Home Depot paying more on a broad across the state and private utility territory basis.
But a clarification
mm-hmm.
here,
yeah,
then.
Please.
I thought the bill said that there would be a cap of $500.
That's per site, I believe, Mr. Chair.
So
I believe that's per site.
Yeah, but per site, that the big Home Depot, I assume, would be $500 for the Home Depot in Gresham. $500 cap.
Well, that would be actually, I have some other things on that, but since you brought it up, I don't know if Jeff knows the question. It says retail customer. I don't know. It doesn't say meter. I don't know if multiple sites are considered one customer or if it's based on meters.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Jeff Bissonnette with Citizens Utility Board representing residential ratepayers. And so not my constituency, but I can tell you that the cap is on a per meter per site. Basis. So if a Home Depot, for instance, did reach over into the up into the industrial lengths, which it probably wouldn't, frankly, but for the sake of argument, let's say it would, the Home Depot in Gresham would be considered a the meter they have there would be considered a site, and another meter on another store in Portland would be considered another one.
Right.
But again, those would probably be large commercial accounts, not industrial accounts.
That's a question for you. Yes. Senator George.
So just to clarify, because I want to make sure I understand this correctly. So you can get charged up to $6,000 per year per site, and if you have multiple sites, you could end up racking up quite, mm-hmm. over your entire organization, you could rack up quite a bill. Under the way the system is currently set up.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that's the point I was trying to make, that you'd have retailers who have many more multiple sites because it's per meter. And you actually have more than 1 meter at some industrial sites, and that's important to note as well. So just keep in mind that that does cause a compression. So as more and more as you increase the charge, and as you also tie it to something like CPI, more and more customers will hit that cap, compressing the rates upon those customers who have not hit the cap. So it's just something to keep in mind, I think, for the committee. And I think also our members are interested in finding out how do these funds compare, the funds that are collected in private utility territory, compare with the funds that are collected in consumer-owned utility territories. And there's many of them, but I think there is a sense of the need to be, for our members to have understanding about where are we paying a commensurate level or not with other utilities in Oregon, and perhaps even comparing those levels with other states. And those are our comments.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Kevin Finney, Public Policy Director with Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon. Pleasure to be here today. Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon is a Christian association of 17 Christian denominations, including Protestant, Orthodox, and Catholic bodies. Our mission is to bring together Oregon's diverse faith community for dialogue, advocacy, and community ministries. We operate a number of direct service programs serving our low-income neighbors. In that capacity, we regularly see folks who have to make a choice between paying their utility bills or paying their rent or for food or other basic necessities. We believe nobody should have to make these choices. So we are here today to express our support for Senate Bill 461. We think this has been an effective program that has fallen behind increases in the cost of energy and the growth of the population served. And we think it's time to pass this legislation to bring the program in line with the current need. And I just want to express our support for it today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. McVinney. Mr. Bissonnette.
Again, Mr. Chair, committee members, for the record, Jeff Bissonnette, representing the Citizens Utility Board of Oregon, and we are a private nonprofit organization but are named in state law as the representative of residential ratepayers. And I'm here today to testify briefly for Senate Bill 461. A lot of the comment and questions that have gone before pretty much summarize our position. I would say a couple of quick comments. One is, when it comes down to it, ratepayers are paying for either disconnections or trying to keep as many people, you know, on the system as possible. And so there's so for us, if we actually pay a little less to keep people attached by helping them keep current or pay some back bills, that's important. It not only has a social and humanitarian price to pay, but it also has an economic impact as well for the entire system and for all ratepayers. In terms of the questions raised by AOI and how to, you know, make ongoing adjustments, that's certainly a valid point to make. The CPI index to us seemed like, you know, as good as any. If there are other suggestions, we're happy to look at them. But I think what we have is a situation where we had a program that was established in 1999 at a flat rate, and even though $10 million sounds like and is a lot of money, it doesn't go as far today as it did in 1999, especially after a 32% rate increase for residential customers in 2001, fairly poor economy around that same time, and an economy that is doing better but is replacing jobs with more service jobs rather than sort of the higher paid jobs that, that frankly were lost in the recession. So if there are ways to be more responsive, we're certainly happy to look at them, but recognizing that, you know, as much good work as the legislature does, even if it goes to an annual session, you know, that might not be as responsive as low-income Oregonians, low-income ratepayers need from this program. And so that would be, you know, our only response is that we'd be happy to keep talking about it, but the Consumer Price Index seems reasonable to us. With that, I thank you for the opportunity to appear and happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Mr. Bissonnette. I guess one concern I would have about the CPI is, in fact, it goes back to the previous testimony that we had from the Energy coalition unions, rather than just the cost of the consumer price index, you also have increased metering, increased customers. You have the cost of energy, which goes up. And so the CPI wouldn't necessarily, it's better than doing nothing, I understand, in any given 12-month period, but it wouldn't necessarily actually, quote, keep you up. And one of the things I would think on a negative standpoint is that if you did that, then you're kind of, maybe you're giving the false impression that we don't need to come back and look at it again. And I'd rather actually look at it again and make sure that if things are totally out of whack, that we have a chance to adjust that, as opposed to saying, well, you know, we got the CPI, that's it. You know, there's nothing else needed. I mean, that would be the one observation I'd have on that.
Mr. Chair, with respect, I think that the legislature would have that power anyway, whether the CPI was in place or not, and we could make the judgment whether the CPI was keeping pace or it wasn't. And then if it wasn't, then the legislature wanted to find some other mechanism, the legislature could certainly do that.
Well, I understand that. I'm just saying that I think that sometimes by putting it in statute, you're making a statement that that is appropriate and nothing else is needed. The second thing I'd like to ask your opinion on this, and that is on the cap. I know there was only two of us, Senator Deckert and I, who participated in 1149 and actually went through my committee in 1999 and some of the different things that went to creating that. And notwithstanding some of the comments heard earlier, I would be curious, since, you know, ratepayers, residential or commercial, are all, you know, looking at the same power. They're all looking at their respective interests and trying to keep their rates low. But I would be curious as to your perspective, representing residential ratepayers, as to whether the $500 limitation would still be appropriate while the residential customers were asking to pay the inflationary costs. I mean, is that still appropriate in 2007 as it was in 1999?
I think that Mr. Chair, at the current time, I think a cap is still appropriate, the $500 limit. I have not seen any studies that show that it's inappropriate. It's certainly within the purview of the legislature to open that line of discussion if it so desires, but we wouldn't be doing that.
Okay. Well, that's an important observation, and I appreciate that. Any other comments, questions from this group? Before I let you go, I'd like to we've heard a couple of things here, and since we got especially the customer base is represented on both sides here, as well as the advocates sitting between you, we've heard the one comment regarding the CPI, an issue of discussion on that. Are there other issues within the context of this bill that have not yet been spoken by those who are the customers? We've already heard from the advocacy groups that, you know, even this isn't enough, but we need to do more. But are there anything, is there any other things than those that have been testified to in terms of the language of this bill that somebody would want to put on the table from either residential or commercial customers?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I can't think of anything, and I apologize for not being here for the first part of the hearing. Going back to the CPI, and I appreciate Jeff's comments that it seemed like a good place to land. And keep in mind that this $10 million has been collected in rates in this fashion just since 1149, and there must have been a way that the commission, in terms of private utility territory, made these decisions beforehand, and it might just have been, reflecting back on the conversations in the 1149 debates, that it was simply, you know, part of rate making. And we may want to go back and look at how they made those adjustment decisions, or at least have the commission come in and talk about how they made those adjustment decisions prior to tying anything to the CPI, because that might be a better reflection. Again, in the past, it was part of rate making. It wasn't someplace separate. I mean, this is obviously part of rate making, but it was part of that internal.
Well, Ms. Brandes, that's a very good comment, because this is a little different animal than a normal business, because of the ability to go to the commission and lay out their costs and expenditures and have those looked at, which may have an impact on how this is looked at anyway, maybe an internal type of CPI with the PUC. I think that would be valuable to have them come and give some comment on that. And it looks like you'd like to make one on that.
Yeah,
as well.
Just to follow up on your question and a follow up to that comment. I'm not one of the reasons we did what we did in Senate Bill 1149 back in 1999 was because there wasn't any anything in rates that provided a steady, reliable, consistent stream of resources for low income. And in fact, this was a response to decreasing federal support through the LIHEAP program. Now, again, if there are ways that the PUC can be, active in doing this, then, again, we're open to discussing that. But, we put this in as a consistent, consistent way to support this very important need, both, again, on a social level and on a utility ratepayer level. I would also, early on, there's, Mr. Chair, yourself brought up some issues of administrative efficiency and that sort of thing, both within, the utilities, the state agencies, the local agencies, the PUC, and there are always ways to try and capture more efficiencies, and we're always willing to take part in those discussions. And so I guess I just wanted to respond to that, as that is an ongoing issue for us, and if and we're happy to take part in any of those types of discussions that go on. So
thank you very much. Any comments, questions? We will be bringing this back, but I think we wanted to get what the issues were on the table. I think we did a good job of doing that. We'll have some other discussions and bring this back, hopefully in a relatively short period of time after we've had a chance to digest some of the comments here.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
We always go to the ratepayers, and I still want to make another comment regarding PGE and Pacific Core. Those are the big ones. I can't really speak for the smaller cooperatives, but it truly would be nice to have them contributing to this in some way also. That isn't in this bill, but and I know that PGE in particular, not Pacific Core, but I'm sure they do a tremendous amount of community service. I know they do that. But it would be nice if a certain percentage could go to these programs to help rather than just always lay it on the ratepayers.
Thank you, Chair. Senator Decker.
Thank you. Just on that note, question for AOI. So, Julie, some of the customer groups have stated that they believe this program actually saves money because of the disconnect issue and all the administrative expenses that PGE or Pacifico would have to go through when they go through a rate-making process at the PUC. Are y'all in the same position that, at least with the $10 million in program, that it's actually saving customers money by having some sort of stopgap there to keep people's energy on?
Mr. Chair, Senator Decker, yeah. I mean, I haven't looked at the data, and I've been neglectful in doing that, but my sense is that's the case, and my sense is that would also be the case with the $15 million. My concern about the legislation is nowhere close to hardcore opposition. My concern is you do have this compression onto a non-capped commercial class, and then you also have that CPI issue, which it gives us great pause.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Okay. Thank you very much. Thank all of you. That was very enlightening, and see what we can do with this. So we'll close public hearing on Senate Bill 461. Janet, give us a preview of Wednesday, and then we'll adjourn early again.
Mr. Chair, Wednesday we'll do a work session on one of the personal injury protection motor vehicle insurance bills. It's ready back with amendments. We have a small bill allowing agricultural co-op board directors to be non-members of the co-op, and an assistance for internet systems statewide through the Telecommunications Coordinating Council, a $1 million program to expand internet systems across the state. And that bill would have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means Committee.
Okay.
And then you're all signed up for going on both the meeting and the tour on Friday. Meeting's at 11:30 in Portland. Should be through about 4:30 if you're going on the tour.
Okay. Excellent. Okay. With that, we're adjourned.